أشهد أن محمد رسول الله. أشهد أن محمد.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome once again to Islam in Focus. Today's program will be our Yanath on Jesus, the beloved messenger of Allah. Our topic today will be the first segment of Did Jesus Claim Divinity? I'm your host, Irshad Mimish, and here with me from St. Mary's University is Dr. Jamar Bedoui. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Jamar.
Walaikum assalam.
For the benefit of our viewers, could you please give us a summary of last week's program?
Last week was the second segment of Comparative Christology, and the focus was on the common errors committed by some writers, non-Muslim writers, especially missionaries, Christian missionaries, in trying to reconcile the Quran to their own understanding and to try to prove the divinity of Jesus from the Quran or the saying of the Prophet. And we gave five categories of those errors, reference to fictitious quotations that does not exist anywhere in the Quran if you check it, misquotations, where a quotation says something quite different from what they quote, a partial quotation that breaks the meaning in the middle and gives the opposite meaning than the meaning that you can get if you read the full text. Fourthly, to make claims without putting it in verbatim quotation, but if you go back to the text that they refer to, you find that it does not substantiate those claims at all. And fifthly, the attempt to Hellenize, or as Rezanin called it, to Christianize the language in the Quran by giving it a meaning that's different from the meaning that is derived from the context of the scriptures itself. And I suppose that brought to an end a discussion of the one possibility of examining the question of divinity of Jesus, the possibility the divinity of Jesus is proven in the Quran, but Muslims are not aware of it, and we have seen that this is not the case. The other side of the coin would be just to ask the other question also, as we suggested in some earlier programs, as to whether also it is possible that the divinity of Jesus has no basis really in the Bible, or it is a matter of probably misinterpretation, and that is perhaps what we might examine as we examine the other side also.
Okay, well, what can we do to avoid the problems of misinterpreting the Bible as non-Christians? As, for example, Christians have had in misinterpreting the Quran.
To start with, of course, it is only human that a Muslim understands the Bible a little differently than the Christian would, and the Christian would understand the Quran also differently. I mean, there is some element of that which is only human in terms of perception. However, I'll try my best to be very sensitive to this and to be as humanly as possible, less biased, if you will, because no human can claim to be 100% objective. That doesn't exist, really. To be more specific rather than just make a broad statement. I hope the viewers will notice that I will avoid these problems that has been mentioned before. I'm not going to make any quotation to anything which is not in the Bible. No fictitious quotation. I'm not going to give a partial quotation that gives a partial meaning. I'm not going to quote something differently, distort the quotation. If I quote, I refer to something as it is, especially when it's quoted verbatim rather than the general meaning. Nor am I trying to, again, Islamize the language of the Bible or explain the terms in the Bible according to the definition of those terms in Arabic, as some writers did with the Quran. I invite the viewers to keep track of everything I'm saying, to jot down the biblical references I'm going to make, chapter and verse, to check it on their own to see whether this is an honest and truthful quotations or not. The references I'm making is to the Revised Standard Version of the Bible, and I think that's readily available. And I think there's a big difference here, really, because many of the Christian writers and missionaries who quoted the Quran, they realized or took advantage, in fact, of the fact that many Western readers here have no ready access to the Quran. It's available, but they have no ready access to the Quran, nor are they aware even that the Quran exists in its original language, which provides another way of checking what any writer is writing. In our case, it's quite different. We are speaking here in the Western context. We're speaking in Canada and North America. And any viewer definitely have ready access to the Bible, so you can easily check anything that's being said. So any of those errors that I described before can be detected. And this is a very important control. I hope and pray that I would not make any mistake, at least in quotation. People can differ in understanding, but no deliberate distortion. And if that happens, I hope it would be something unintended and I stand corrected.
Okay, now how about the question of explaining the Bible according to Quranic terms? Can that problem be avoided?
This also can be avoided if we try to explain the terms and the quotations from the Bible also in the context of other places in the Bible rather than in the context of the Quranic meaning, even though it might be the similar similar type of conclusion. So I'm not trying, for example, like some of the writers did before, and they said the word, the use of the term word or kalima in the Quran means the logos, which is a Hellenistic concept that has nothing to do with the Quran whatsoever. I'm not going to do the opposite by saying that on the basis and authority of the Quran, this term in the Bible must be interpreted this way. I'm going to avoid that. And this will be obvious when we come to the discussion of the titles given to Jesus in the Bible itself, like the Son of God, Messiah, Lord. And when we come to that, I will be referring to the Bible itself and to the context of the Bible, not the Quran, to come up with a variant understanding or interpretation, really, of what has been so common for a long period of time. And, of course, there may be cases where some verses within the Bible itself might not be totally consistent. That might be two different messages sent at the same time, or things that doesn't seem to fit together. But this is a problem relating to the quotations in the Bible itself that has nothing to do with the validity of the reference. It's not because you're Islamizing the language of the Bible. If there's a problem of inconsistency, it's not because of my interpretation. It is something in the text of the Bible itself. In other words, I hope we will be discussing that within the Bible itself, within the context, actually, of the Bible. If there is any reference in the Quran, and that would be very, very limited, it would be only casual, but I would say the focus would be on the Bible in its own context and usage of the terms.
Well, now, another problem may come up. Some people may argue that even if your references are biblical in origin, that you can't avoid viewing them as a Muslim. How would you respond to that?
You see, this question reminds me with a discussion that I had recently with a friend of mine that I referred to earlier. He's a well-placed individual in the National Council of Churches. He's a theologian. He's a missionary who lived in Muslim countries for several years. And the basic topic for the discussion that we had, a sort of seminar, was to present two different views as to whether Jesus ever claimed to be divine. In my presentation, we gave the evidence from the Bible. All my references were made to the Bible. And then his turn came to make a comment. And he said that he does not see anything wrong with the kind of interpretation that I have given to the biblical references. Actually, at one point, even he said that you might find even some Christian themselves, Christian theologian, who would say exactly the same thing, that Jesus didn't claim divinity and use the same kind of evidence that Badawi presented, he said. He said, however, but still the presentation was influenced by his background as a Muslim who's trying to be true to his faith, true to the Quran. And some of the audience during the discussion period said, yes, but how could you say that he is presenting this as a Muslim, even though you said yourself that if a Christian theologian present that, he would probably use the same references and present it in the same way. His answer was that, yes, there may be the way it's presented, but not the content. This question is quite important and quite common, I should say. But let me clarify 2 points. First of all, if by saying that the person is influenced by his own background when he reads the Bible or has presuppositions, that same exact human bias also exists when a Christian, for example, read the Bible, because when he starts reading the Bible, he also is influenced by his background. For example, at one point he say, right, the only way is to be objective is to read the Bible without any presupposition and let the Bible speak to you. But again, a Christian who has been raised to believe that Jesus was divine or the Son of God, the divine Son of God, will not go to read the Bible without any presupposition. You see my point? He would also be reading the Bible with the background that Jesus is divine and seek evidence for that. By the same token, even if a non-Muslim, a non-Christian, leave Muslims and Christians alone, if another person doesn't believe in either religion, reads the Bible, he's not also free from bias, because he is also biased by his own background, whether he's atheist, whether he's Buddhist, or Hindu, or whatever. And that, again, will affect his view. In other words, if you talk about this type of bias, it is just beyond our human objectivity to avoid. Nobody reads any book, really, without any presupposition whatsoever. But there is difference between someone who would be open and honest, accepting clear evidence, and between someone who is so biased that even the clearest evidence is rejected, even a very fair, reasonable, and valid argument is not even considered at all. So, to sum up, what we are hoping to discuss here is not simply a Muslim understanding of the Bible, but I would like to indicate also that many of the things that we'll be talking about in the coming programs are things that has been already stated by Christian theologians. It has been stated by church people, people highly placed who are in the hierarchy of the church itself, in various churches, learned people. So it's not just a sort of Muslim background that explained this material that we're going to discuss, because definitely they say exactly the same thing that we're going to say, and definitely you cannot say that those writers come from a Christian background that caused them to believe that Jesus really was not divine. And I hope that this would make the topic very interesting and hopefully fruitful too.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And that sounds fair enough, Dr. Jamal. But now I would like to ask you if you have any classification in mind of the various proofs, I'm talking about proofs here, of the divinity of Jesus as suggested by Christian theologists and clergymen.
Well, you could classify it in a variety of ways. In my humble understanding, with my limited knowledge, I came up with 5 basic classifications. 1, claims that Jesus was divine on the basis of what has been said about him. That's by others, by witnesses, by disciples, or claimed disciples. 2, what Jesus himself claimed for himself to be divine. 3, the evidence from his deeds, life, and miracles that shows that these miracles only come from someone who was divine. 4, the message, the nature of the message and mission of Jesus on earth, aside from all of these 3, and that leads to the question of the notion of God incarnate who came in the form of his divine Son, the question of Trinity, the question of sin and atonement, and how can one reconcile himself to God. 5, as some people suggest, is the proof of the personal experience and that the matter is a mystery. And I think each of these would be worthy of some discussion.
Okay, well, let's start it. Maybe we'll start examining what was said about Jesus. Now, can you explain the nature of this argument?
Well, the argument here is based on numerous quotations or references, especially to the New Testament, of course, New Testament literature. I have selected a number of them that seem to make the point, I think, quite effectively, because you can have more along the same line. First, they say that Jesus was divine because if you check the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 7, verses 28 and 29, people reported that Jesus was speaking as having authority, that he's speaking in a way or teaching in a manner which is different from the scribes. And they say that is unique. Secondly, it is said that when the soldiers were sent to Jesus, they reported that we never saw a man speak like that. So that's not human. The reference is the Gospel according to John, chapter 7, verses 45 and 46. Thirdly, that Paul said about Jesus that in him all the fullness of deity dwells bodily. His letter to the Colossians, chapter 2, verse 9. That Paul said that in the name of Jesus every knee should bow. Philippians, chapter 2, verse 6. That Paul said that God manifest, that Jesus is God manifest in flesh. 1 Timothy, chapter 3, verse 16. That again, Paul said that Jesus was the image of God. Colossians, chapter 1, verses 15 through 17. That John said that Jesus, that in the beginning there was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Gospel according to John, chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. These are a few of many, but perhaps may represent more or less the basic argument. And you might notice readily that most, not all, most of those references are made to Paul, who never saw Jesus during his ministry and was actually persecuting Christians and claimed to have converted later, and John, whose gospel has been subject to a great deal of question by biblical scholars as to whether it was written by the original disciple John, or was it written in response or in support of the idea that emerged later on about the divinity of Jesus. But at least I should say that this might represent some of the arguments. Some of these references are based on a pamphlet that was distributed at Indiana University, prepared by a couple of clergy on the occasion of a Muslim-Christian dialogue on the divinity of Jesus. So that seemed to reflect some of the thinking of some clergy, at least.
Well, now that you've mentioned these quotations, maybe I'll ask you to evaluate them as proof of divinity.
Well, first of all, some, I'm not saying all, but some of the many references that are referred to support the question of divinity does not necessarily mean divinity. For example, if you say that Jesus was speaking with authority, there is no problem with that. It means that he was unique in his time, because a prophet, a truthful prophet and messenger of Allah, definitely speak in a way different from the scribes, who himself he accused of, you know, being hypocritical and, you know, not really following the path of the scriptures. But when you say that someone was unique in his time, it doesn't mean divine. Uniqueness is not equivalent to divinity. Some of them, for example, that say that Jesus was the image of God. Well, in the book of Genesis, it is said also that God created man in his own image. So Adam, according to the biblical text, is the image of God, but nobody said that Adam was divine. But even if we assume that some statements are more explicit, said by followers of Jesus, or claimed followers of Jesus, because sometimes we don't know even whether it was the follower whose name appears on the book that wrote it or not, this is another issue. But suppose even for the sake of discussion that we assume that some texts say that Jesus was the creator or God or son of God or one person in a triune Godhood or Trinity. The response is this. Suppose, let's turn the question back or around. Suppose 100 person come to you and tell you that such and such person who lived in this country or that country was indeed God in human form. Is that testimony by those 100 people, or 1,000 for that matter, who reported that they were witnesses, is that in itself sufficient proof that indeed that person they referred to was God in human form or was divine? Definitely not. Because if somebody makes that claim to me, I first of all would have to ascertain first whether the person they refer to himself claimed that, or are they claiming that about him.
Mm-hmm.
This is very important because in history we find that many people have been deified or witnessed by their followers to be divine. Buddha never claimed to be God, at least not to my knowledge, but some people deified him after him. Rama in India never claimed to be divine, but his followers believed that he was divine, and they can give you all kinds of witness. There are reports that even some Hindus believe that Gandhi, Mahatma Gandhi, was actually one of the reincarnation of God, so that he was God incarnate. But again the question, did Gandhi himself say, I am God incarnate? But even if it is proven that any of those individuals referred to claim to be God or Son of God or God incarnate, one has to make sure, first of all, whether that report is correct or not. Is there any clear evidence that he actually said that? Was his saying recorded in its time? Is there proof that it was not just interpretation or something that is attributed to him, or is that simply a hearsay? Otherwise, if there is no evidence that he actually said that, I would not pay much attention. If there is even proof that he disclaimed that or didn't say that, then of course you dismiss their claim without any hesitation. But even if we assume that the reports are true, that he actually claimed to be divine, and that what he said has been communicated to us and preserved and written from his mouth and recorded historically until it reached us, even then, it doesn't justify for me or for anyone really to accept such a serious claim without any verification. Even if he said unequivocally, I am God incarnate, not the creature of God, we should find out whether there is any reason to believe that he was not a creature of God. Is that claim itself substantiated? Is there good reason, you know, to accept that claim? In other words, that gets us actually to the second stage. Not just to take the words of people about him. Actually, Jesus himself at one point indicated that the words of the Master are more important. So why he refers to the words about Jesus rather than what he said about himself? Why talk about what people thought about Jesus rather than examining what he himself thought?
Perhaps we can begin with the second category of proofs that you mentioned earlier. In other words, what Jesus said about himself.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we ascertain that he actually said that?
Well, first of all, as to what has been said about him, again, based on Christian literature, mm-hmm. things like the writings of Josh McDowell, for example, and others. And that's repeated so many times, and lots of literature mention this, that Jesus said, for example, that he and the Father, or God, are one, that he is the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes unto the Father but by him. That it is attributed to him to that he said that whoever has seen me, he has seen God. And they present these quotations as a clear evidence in their mind that Jesus claimed equality with God. As far as the part of the question where you say, how do we know that this actually prove or not prove divinity? I think the answer to that relates to the manner in which the New Testament literature has been written. Who wrote what? In what language? Who translated from which language? Are the translators known? Under what conditions did they write? what was the explicit or implicit purpose behind what they wrote? Was it to report what Jesus said or to support one argument against the other in the early turbulence of the church? Is there any evidence of availability of continuous chain of narration that goes back to Jesus himself when there's proof that there have been no changes or something just attributed to him? Is there any evidence that there have been no editing or change or modification of these statements throughout history? This is a very important matter because it relates to the fundamentals of belief. It relates to belief in the creator of heavens and earth. So it's not a light matter that one can take it without this kind of verification. However, this issues, the methodological issues as to the proof that actually Jesus said that I live for the time being, because that requires a separate topic by itself in terms of authority and authenticity and so on. And we'll assume for the sake of discussion only that we accept the text of the Bible as it is today. Even if we make that assumption, we fail to find any verse, any single quotation in the Bible that Jesus, in which Jesus says unequivocally, clearly, in no ambiguous terms, that I am God incarnate, I am the Son of God in body or in human form. And this is not unreasonable to demand, because this is not unusual within the context of the Bible. In the Old Testament, the statement that God made about himself were quite clear. I am the God, the Lord, your only God, there is none but me. So the Bible is quite consistent and clear on this issue in the Old Testament. So one would expect something so clear, because God is not an issuer of confusion in a matter of fundamental of belief. He wouldn't leave it for people to interpret or misinterpret. It has to be quite clear. But in my humble understanding, there is no single verse in the whole New Testament in which Jesus speaks with this clarity that I am God, worship me alone, other than God. And as indicated, this is a matter of paramount importance in the question of belief. It's the cornerstone, really, of belief that one cannot leave to speculation. But even the verses that has been referred to can still be interpreted in a reasonable way to refer not really to a physical relationship or to unity in essence between Jesus and the Creator, but rather to regard that as a sort of spiritual oneness or a spiritual relationship with God. In other words, the issue really here, aside from authentication of the foundation of the claim of divinity of Jesus, is a matter of interpretation in the absence of unequivocal terms. I do realize, of course, that some of the terms that I referred to earlier, or some of the quotations that we've come to discuss in detail, that I and the Father are one, whoever has seen me has seen the Father, nobody comes unto the Father but by me, I am the way, the truth, the life, that some people may think that this is unequivocal, but as I promised to do, within the context of the Bible, based on evidence from the Bible itself, we will show that it is not interpreted, or it should not actually be interpreted this way, and it doesn't mean divinity at all, in the context of the Bible.
Inshallah. Thank you very much, Dr. Jamal. We've run out of time, and thank you all for joining us here on Islam in Focus. As usual, we would appreciate any questions or comments that you may have. Our phone number and our address will be appearing on your screen. Madhav Asir Islam in Focus. Assalamu alaikum, and hope you'll join us here next week.
أشهد أن محمدا رسول الله أشهد أن